Hello, my love. Welcome back to the show. On today's episode of the podcast, I get very vulnerable with you. And I allow myself to talk about a topic in an area of my life that I actually never, ever talk about. It's a very heartfelt episode for me. And I want to start off by just giving a little bit of a trigger warning so that you know what this episode is about as well. Today on the show, I open up about a paralyzing fear that I live with, that I feel in my body almost every single moment of the day. And that is the fear I have of losing my daughter. And I want to say, if loss or the fear of loss, and specifically the fear of child loss and that kind of grief, if that makes you feel unsteady in any way, if talking about that or listening to someone share their own fear and their own experience talking about that, if that makes you feel uncertain or if it makes your nervous system go haywire, then today's episode is not a good episode for you. If, on the other hand, you've been longing to feel some resonance and for someone to open up about their fear in this area of life because you feel the same and you want to feel less alone and you want to get a little bit closer to that place inside of your own heart that is also looking for healing and for you to be able to soothe your own fears and your own nervous system, and that's helpful to you through storytelling, then I think today's episode could be a particularly beautiful one for you to dive into. I feel really vulnerable just sharing today's episode because this topic for me is the hardest one of all. And on this show, we talk about absolutely everything. This is the one thing that is so hard for me to talk about. And I can feel it even speaking these words now. I get a little bit shaky. So as you listen, please listen kindly. And thank you so much for being here. Let's dive in. Sometimes in life, skepticism can serve you well. It can save you money, keep you from wasting a day at a timeshare presentation, and help you avoid spreading gossip. To be honest, when I'm faced with a new scenario, I usually tend to be a skeptic until something proves me wrong. And if you're like me, you can probably spot a too-good-to-be-true health hack from a mile away and read labels like it's your job. That's where Ritual comes in. They know that every good skeptic deserves a multivitamin that exceeds your standards. Their clinically backed Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin has high quality, traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. Take 2 delayed release capsules per day that optimize your body's absorption, and you'll get 9 key nutrients. Ritual's Essential for Women is USP verified, so you know you can trust what you're putting in your body. Only about 1% of supplement brands on the market have the USP verified mark, which shows the product contains the ingredients actually listed on the label. On top of that, Ritual multivitamins are vegan, non-GMO project verified, gluten and major allergen free, certified B Corp, and made traceable. I take my vitamins every morning with breakfast. It's part of my daily ritual, and I feel so good doing it. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/yogagirl. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/yogagirl for 25% off. Hello, 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 my friend. Welcome back to the show. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Yoga Girl podcast, Conversations from the Heart. As always, from the heart. I am speaking from the heart right now. Speaking from the heart right now, I am exhausted. I am so tired. I woke up this morning, you know that feeling? I can really remember being a teenager. Do you remember the time in your life when it was the hardest to wake up in the morning? And for some reason, even though I have a child who like went through major sleep deprivation and all that stuff, that time of my life wasn't the time that was the hardest for me to get out of bed. It was like having a kid or having a baby that needs to eat, that you're responsible for. There is a primal, like larger than life kind of strength that comes with having a newborn that gets you out of bed, right? No matter how little you've slept the night before. But I can remember being a teenager not wanting to wake up, like not wanting to get up to go to school. That kind of like really heavy, hazy, oh my God, just 5 more minutes. Can you remember that feeling? Or maybe even younger, like maybe like being preteen, like that kind of age of just like getting up to get to school was the worst. And you just wanted 5 more minutes, 5 more minutes, 5 more minutes is all you wanted in the morning. That kind of feeling is the feeling I had this morning. Just like I almost couldn't open my eyes, tired, drag myself out of bed. And it took almost like 2 hours this morning for me to start feeling like a human. That's how tired I am. And I am this tired because Leia has been really sick. And I decided I'm gonna try to find a way for this podcast episode to talk about this without sharing a bunch of intimate like medical information about what's going on with her. But she's been really sick. She missed school for a week. She's been sick for a week. And it started off as this kind of crazy, really overwhelmingly intense stomach bug that we found out later like wasn't really a stomach bug, or maybe was a stomach bug related to something else, and became what I think was dehydration that became something else. And she ended up having to have a medical procedure at the ER this weekend. And of course, this all happened. Of course, this happened when Dennis was out of town. It's becoming comical. It's actually comical now how every time Dennis, my husband, every time he leaves the family unit to do anything, he goes on a little vacation. He goes, like, now he's in Holland spending a lot of time with his family. He went to see his family in Amsterdam for a couple days. And it's kind of like he can leave to go do his thing and just let me know. Like, okay, when that terrible thing that's going to happen tomorrow when I'm gone, just remember, you know, stay calm, take a deep breath, and you got this. You know, I'll be home soon. Because every time the man leaves the family unit, something crazy happens, like something terrible, something, some crisis, something catastrophic, something really inconvenient, some major discomfort is gonna land on the family when he's not here. That's just what it is. So he left Friday morning, and of course, Thursday afternoon, Leia got really sick, and she just kept increasingly getting more and more sick for every day that he was gone. And for me, you know, there's a physical component to this, and any parent will know, or any person who's been a caretaker of someone who's unwell knows that, of course, not sleeping for several days straight is super hard on our system, right? Of course, always going to be. And I had, I think, 3 days straight where I didn't sleep really at all. I think the first day she was ill, I was awake for 24 hours, no sleep, zero sleep. I was terrified that she was going to die. I was terrified she was going to stop breathing. I was terrified she was going to choke. I had all these things going on. So I was just up the first night, like 24 hours. The next night, I was that kind of like half asleep where you're up every 15 minutes just making sure that your kid is okay kind of thing. And then the third night, even less, you know, fourth day was the day we ended up in the ER. And after that, she was much, much, much better. But still, I'm not like, you know, if Dennis was there, we could take turns, which doesn't really happen because his like level of alertness and worry is never the same as mine. But at least when you have another person there, you know, someone has your back, you can rest a little deeper. So there's a physical component of that. And then, of course, being on alert in that way is really exhausting, right? You know, worrying is really exhausting. And the big thing, which I'm really like trying to recover from now, is this emotional exhaustion of being worried about the well-being of someone you love. And I think, of course, it's really big for any parent. Like any parent knows, anytime your child is unwell or sick, whether it's a little thing or a big thing or anything in between, is always a challenge. But for anyone, you know, who's had a loved one ill, it's horrible. It's horrible. It's truly, truly, truly horrible. And I know I have my own kind of inner journey around illness and my own inner fear around the well-being of the people I love and fear I have of something really bad happening, and this feeling of when's the other, the shoe's going to drop any moment, someone's going to, we're going to get bad news, or someone's going to die, or someone has cancer, or and we have a family member right now struggling with really serious illness. And, you know, both Dennis and I have lost people in our lives, and I've lost a lot of people in my life. So I think I have this inner feeling that at any moment, you know, someone could get severely ill and die. At any moment, someone might leave, something might not be okay. And when that sort of, wounding gets triggered in me from Leia being sick, I cannot deal. Like I full on, and I recognize this, I can see this as a, I don't want to call it a flaw, but I feel like it is a flaw in me. I feel like it's something I really want to work on. I feel like it's something where probably I'm passing on some uncool stuff to my child. Like I know my own energy around illness is not cool to hang around, to be around. And I would love to, enter a deeper healing space around this, because it's so, so, so hard for me to exist with. And at the same time, I know I'm not the only one. You know, I think most parents feel this way, that that saying that once you have a child, it's like for the rest of your life, you're living with your heart outside of your body. I heard that quote or that saying before I had a baby, and I was like, you know, that doesn't sound that doesn't sound possible. Like, how could you live your life feeling like your heart is on the outside of your body? And that is exactly what it feels like. That's what it's been like for me. It's this sheer terror. I mean, it absolutely is. And of course, it's unbelievable, profound, most incredible love and joy, and just like your heart growing a gazillion sizes. But at the same time, it's just pure terror, you know? Like, how does nature work in this way where you suddenly end up with something, with this tiny being that not only is the most important thing in your entire life, that you love more than life itself, that is so valuable and important and precious, and like literally it's the most important thing now, and also this tiny little being is completely fucking helpless, can't support themselves, can't even hold their tiny little heads up when they're born because they're so fragile, right? Literally, they're the most fragile tiny being ever. We're not like other mammals, you know. A lot of animals give birth in the wild, and those like animals can already crawl, they can already walk, they can already very quickly, they can kind of get their bearings and feed by themselves and move by themselves and then follow mom around, and you know. But human babies are so freaking helpless. It is crazy. You cannot leave that child unattended for 5 seconds. I mean, you know, like kids like need body heat and support and to be held at all times, and obviously to nurse, and you know, can't get anywhere on their own for a very long time. Like, that's a long time for a baby to just be immobile, you know, compared to every other mammal that's around. And there's something about that, you know, there's something about that very human bond and that very human fear, and that, of course, very human love at the same time. That for me personally has been just a very, very big challenge in my journey of motherhood. Do scents evoke memories and transport you back to being on the beach during your favorite vacation? I know they do for me. Osea's Andaria Algae Body Oil smells like summer or the beach in Aruba, bottled with all natural uplifting notes of mango, mandarin, grapefruit, lime, and cypress. But it's not just about the elevated scent. This body oil is clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and deeply moisturize, leaving skin silky and soft. It delivers that coveted post-vacation glow, like you just returned from a tropical getaway. And right now, you can get 10% off your first order with our code YOGA at OseaMalibu.com. I love Osea's Undaria Algae Body Oil. I use it every single day and I have for so many years. It makes me feel silky smooth and just glowing. This body oil is rich but never greasy and clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity. It visibly firms your skin, leaving you more sculpted and toned. No wonder I feel so great after using it. But it gets even better. With Osea, you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Osea's products are clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified. They are a women-founded company that has been making seaweed-infused skincare for over 28 years. So bring on summer. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean vegan skin and body care at Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code YOGA at oseamalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to oseamalibu.com and use the code YOGA for 10% off. And I have talked about this on the show. I think I've talked about this on this show enough that it is a bit of a theme. I get people writing me on social media a lot. Like, I remember you were very fearful when you had your baby and you had a lot of trauma there and a lot of like panic that she was going to die. Like, how did you deal with that? I get that question often, way more than I get questions about like yoga or something, you know, how did you overcome that fear? And the truth is I did not, right? I didn't overcome that fear. I didn't fully heal whatever thing is there to heal. And I don't know if you know, everything we experience at all times is for us to heal so we're done with it and we move on and then that fear is gone forever. I don't think that's how life works, especially these big things. But there's definitely manageable levels of fear, right? Which I think many parents live with. Like Dennis, for example, of course, like when Leia's off on her own, doing something, he's thinking about her, he's worrying about her, he's always, you know, like any mom or dad, he has this idea in the back of his head, like, what's Leia doing? Where is she? Is she with someone? And I have a lot of friends who never had that overwhelming panic, you know, who never, like, it never occurred to them, like, what if my kid just stops breathing, right? I have a lot of friends who were very calm and very steady and very trusting in their journey of parenthood. That was not me. Okay, that was not me at all and has continued to not be me at all. So there's this manageable level of fear and worry that I think a lot of people just live with. I think if you are a parent and you have a kid for the rest of your life, you are going to worry about that child. That's just the nature of having a kid. But then there is this unmanageable level of fear when you have a fear or this terror of something happening to your child and it completely inhibits your ability to live and enjoy life, right? Where it actually becomes a huge obstacle in your life, where it's something that becomes so overwhelming that you can't think of anything else, that you can't sleep, that you can't eat, that you obsess over it, that you sit with these major worst case scenarios in your head all the time. You know, like there's manageable, livable fear, and then there is unmanageable, actually, you know, harmful fear. And that harmful, really unmanageable fear is what I've been dealing with since I became a mom. So 5 years and 3 months now. That's a long time to live with a kind of unmanageable panic in your body. And when I, you know, when I first became a mom, my whole journey of pregnancy, this was not a theme or a topic that was at the front of my mind. I was not, you know, since I got pregnant, talking about what if something happens in this pregnancy. I was not worried about miscarrying. It was not I don't think Dennis and I had that talk even. I was really set on having a totally natural birth and birthing at home and my body can do this and all this stuff. Like it was not, yeah, I didn't have a conscious fear around something happening when I was pregnant, which is something I know a lot of people experience, this like, oh, what if I lose the baby? Or what if this happens? Or what if birth doesn't go well? And what I didn't realize until later, until I think it was when Leia was almost one, was that the reason I wasn't having those conversations, the reason I wasn't venting those kinds of fears and thoughts and worries with friends or with people or even Dennis, is that I had that, it wasn't just a fear. It was a knowing. For me, that fear, that that panic, that worry was so ingrained in my system that I wasn't worried about if something's going to happen to my child. I was under the belief that when something happens to my child. And that terror, that fear was so overwhelming, and it was such a part of it was so ingrained in my system that I couldn't even bring it to surface, because it was kind of like if I spoke it out loud, I would have to acknowledge it to myself, and it was too big for me to hold. So I kept it stuffed really deep, really, really, really deep, to the point that I don't think I was even consciously aware that that's what I was thinking and feeling and experiencing. It was really deep. I put it in the deepest basement, you know, of all the fears that I have and all the worries that I have, and I have many. I put this one in the bottom floor basement dungeon and you know, locked it up and threw away the key. Like, this I will never address, right? It felt just too, the magnitude of that was too much, too overwhelming for me to hold. And when Leah was born, you know, and I still think I have a lot of processing to do, to be honest, around her birth. And it was, when I think back of her birth, it was a very positive birth experience. It absolutely was. You know, I started this podcast, the Yoga Girl podcast. I started it when Leah was 1 week old. So the first episode of this podcast, if you scroll back throughout all the years, the very first episode is her birth story. And it's me telling the birth story. And you'll hear it there on that episode. I've never gone back to listen to that, but I would be really curious just to see what it sounds like. I remember like feeling like I had to rehearse it. Maybe I should script it. Maybe I should write it down and then read it. Like, I was so nervous. It probably sounds a little bit robotic. I can imagine how I told that story. But if I think back on her birth, it was a very positive experience. Like, nothing went wrong. There was not a moment of panic in there. There was not a moment where I felt unsafe or where I felt like my baby was unsafe. It didn't go according to plan, of course not, but it was really a beautiful, beautiful experience. It hurt like a motherfucker, obviously. It was not one of those like euphoric orgasmic births, no. But it was a really beautiful experience. I don't have like a traumatic thing I ever felt like I needed to process. But, and here's the kicker. So it was a 24-hour birth, like from contractions starting for real, where I didn't dilate more than 4 centimeters for almost 20 hours. So the first hours of contractions, I got to 4 centimeters, and then I stayed there for a really long time. Very, very, very long time. And in the very end, when I was finally dilated enough to push, I had a really hard time. I had a really hard time. And I've been making these connections recently, like actually, like this has been on my mind. I've journaled a little bit about it. I haven't started unpacking it in a major way, but I'm now beginning to connect these dots in what I think is something that's ready to heal or kind of fall into place. That when it was time for me to push, when it was time for her to really arrive in the world, I remember so vividly the first push, the midwife, or my midwife, Anita, she said, wow, okay, you know, she's here. She's going to be here 15 minutes, you know. She thought it was like 2 pushes away and she would come, because, I mean, she was out. She was on her way. Like, she was crowning. Everything was really, after this very long birth, like, she was arriving. And I think I had another 2 hours or something insane of pushing. I couldn't push her out. It was like all the really intense, heavy work of laboring and the contractions and moving through all of that. And then finally, what's supposed to be like the final thing, and everything I had read at that point, every single person I had ever spoken to, everyone. Now I know that's not the case, but what I had been told to me was that pushing is going to be this overwhelming, primal thing where the push contractions just come and you can't stop them. So I was worried that I was going to tear because push contractions were going to be too big. And there was a moment where you have to pause and not push. And like, it's this primal urge that just takes over and, you know, your body just pushes the baby out. That didn't happen for me. I never got a push contraction. I never, not once, even in the very end, never got that feeling or urge to push. So it was like I had to do the complete manual. It was the hardest work I've ever done in my entire life. Like the 21 hours or whatever it was leading up to when I was pushing her out was a cakewalk compared to the hours of pushing that last part. And I feel this, like even sharing the story, like I start to like my hand goes to my heart and I have to like take a breath to keep telling the story. And when she finally came out, you know, finally after all that, she finally came out and she, you know, I got to pull her out. Like I had my hands under her armpits. Like the midwife was like, hey, she's here, grab her. And I grabbed her underneath her armpits and I pulled her out myself and put her on my chest. And she made this noise. Oh, like I have it on video. I wish I could play it. She made this noise when she came out. It wasn't a big scream. It wasn't like a, wah, you know, this big thing. And it wasn't silence. It was this kind of proclamation. She just announced her arrival in this beautiful, it was like she was like, hey, I'm here. You know, it was so light. It wasn't sad. It wasn't, you know, it was like she let me know that she was alive, that she was here, that she was breathing, and she made that sound as I put her on my chest. And my thought, and I don't know if you've ever, I mean, everyone who's listening, who's given birth, like that moment of having your child like on your chest for the first time, your firstborn. I mean, it's a huge moment. My first thought was, she's alive. It wasn't, oh my God, like here's my daughter. She's finally here. It wasn't like, oh my God, I'm a mom. It wasn't, my first thought was, she's alive. And because unconsciously or subconsciously, I was expecting her not to be. And this is super hard for me to share. Yeah, super hard for me to share. Still, it's been five years and 3 months, and still very, very, very hard for me to share.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So there was a part of me all throughout the pregnancy, you know, even though I could, you know, this was a huge baby. She was 9.5 pounds. You know, she was 4-something kilos. Like she was a huge baby. She was really overdue. I mean, overdue if there's such a thing. I don't believe in due dates really, but she was 42 plus 3 or whatever. Like she was in there for a long time, you know. She was really active all throughout the pregnancy and kicking, and you know, I really felt her presence there. Like I could feel her personality, even like the quality of her being. Like I felt all throughout. But there was a huge part of me that was convinced that she wasn't going to come out alive. And it wasn't even like this fear that I could talk about. Like, I'm worried something's going to happen. I'm worried, you know, I'm going to give birth to a stillborn. Or I'm worried that she's going to be taken away. Or I'm worried that she's not going to make it. Or I'm worried something's going to happen. I never spoke that out loud because I never had the conscious thought. Not once. Not once did I even realize that, hey, I'm sitting with this fear here. We're actually here. I'm really worried about this thing here. Not one time. So for me, that part makes it so much harder and so much worse because it wasn't even the fear of her not making it, but it was my complete belief that she wasn't, right? I was surprised that I gave birth to a baby that was breathing, you know? So this obviously like set the tone
for my first months, my first year as a mother in kind of a tricky way, right? Because it meant I was beginning my journey of motherhood having fully believed I wasn't going to be a mom, right? Fully believing that time would be a time where I was grieving instead of rejoicing. And for the first months of her life, and I don't know if this is a part of postpartum depression. I've never really spoken to any professional about this. But all throughout the day, and I'm talking like all throughout the day, every single day, all day, from the moment that we brought Leia home, I would envision all different ways in which how she would die. Okay, this sounds absurd that I didn't talk to anybody about this. But I would be like holding her, walking up to our bedroom because we had our bedroom upstairs. We have these stone tile floors in our house in Aruba. And as I'm walking her, you know, I'm super steady. Everything's normal. I'm feeling great. Like everything's fine. Nothing bad is happening. I would just envision in my brain how I slip in the stairs. I can't catch my balance. She hits her head on the edge, like this sharp corner edge of the stairs, and she dies. And in my head, I go through the scenario all the way, like all the way, all the way. And it's these like split second little movies almost that would play in my head from beginning till end, and being like a funeral, or I could even envision like a little white casket, or like the end being literally the worst possible thing that could ever possibly happen to anybody. I mean, is there something worse than this? I can't think of a single thing. And then I would like catch that I had that little image, and I would just continue with my day, right? And then I would go and I would put her on the changing table, and I would envision like how I drop her and she, you know, bangs onto the floor and she dies. Or we get in the car and I strap her into the car seat, and I just envision like how we, in the next cross section, there's a car that hits us and she dies. She's in the bath. Even like while holding her in the bath, I would envision just somehow like her slipping out of my arms and then she drowns. Every milestone that she had came along with a new level of just gut-wrenching, really disturbing kind of panic for me. Because, you know, when she started crawling, all of a sudden she could go places. She started flipping from stomach to back and back to stomach. Like she could roll off things. She started walking. She could walk into anything. She started eating. That was horrible for me. Horrible. Horrible. The process of her like learning how to eat and chew and swallow foods was, every meal came along with this major like pressure on top of my chest, because at every bite she took, potentially she could choke, right? Every time we got into a car, potentially we could have a car crash. Every time she went to sleep and take a nap, potentially she would stop breathing, right? Which, you know, obviously, I knew the likelihood of these things in a logical way were very, very, very slim. Like none of this was logical. None of this was coming from my, you know, mature adult logical mind. It was this ingrained thing. Like it all comes from the same place inside of me. Like that moment when I pushed her out and she was born, that was convinced that she was going to die. And then that knowing has kind of lived on in a sense. And it's become more faded and it's become more manageable. And I got to a point when I think she was one, something like that, where I realized that probably, I can't remember who it was. It was someone I had a conversation with, because when I tried talking about these things with other people or with friends or with other moms, people would dismiss me really quickly and say, yeah, everybody feels that way. And if I said, well, I'm constantly nervous that she's going to stop breathing. Yeah, of course. It's living with your heart outside of your body, right? But this, what I was experiencing, wasn't that, right? It wasn't just living with your heart outside of your body. It was living with your heart outside of your body, convinced that that heart is going to get, that heart is going to die every day. You know, there's kind of like normal manageable fear, like I said, and then unmanageable. And this was obviously completely fucking unmanageable. And for every parent who told me this is normal, I did nothing about it. This is normal. This is normal. That shit was not normal. If you're a parent experiencing this level of terror, panic, can't sleep, can't function, can't get the horror show in your brain to stop, like, that is not normal. That is not normal. That is something that deserves attention. That is something that deserves help, support, maybe by a trained professional. That is something that needs to be spoken out loud and spoken about and addressed and brought into the light from this scary place deep in the dungeon, you know. And I can't remember what the final, like, if it was someone I told, like, the extent of what I was feeling. Because, you know, me talking about this now, I still cry. It's very hard to talk about still. Imagine then when she was an actual newborn and this was all so new to me. I mean, it was really hard for me to get to a place of opening up about it. And I can't remember who it was who told me, like, wait, like, this is not normal. You know, like, not sleeping, like, a lot of my sleep deprivation came from not being able to sleep because I needed to hear her breathing. I was, like, hanging over her crib, needing to watch her chest rise and fall all night. I was on all these weird forums. Oh my God. Like, you know, if you put your kid in stripes, if they wear striped pajamas or these kinds of pattern pajamas, it's easier to see their chest rise and fall when they breathe. So then, you know, I was like buying Dennis. I was trying to convince Dennis to let me spend hundreds of dollars on one of these monitors that you attach to your child. So if their heart rate goes down or stops, there's an alarm that goes off, which they use for, like, I think kids in the NICU and children who have conditions where, like, there is a danger of something like that. But Leah was a super healthy kid. You know, she had no problems with anything. And I think all of these things I was doing was just making my fear worse. I wasn't addressing the underlying thing there. I wasn't addressing my nervous system, which was totally shot. I was just trying to find fixes, right? So it was just completely unmanageable. And then when she was around one, I started doing some work around it. And I started talking to someone around it. And I started opening up about it. And it was kind of like a weight was lifted. And it's actually what led me to astrology in the first place. I think I've told this story on the podcast probably a long time ago. But one of my astrologers, that's a funny sentence. I'm laughing at myself now, just so you know. I have a bit of distance to the stuff I do. One of my astrologers, yes, I have several that I consult, okay. But my first one, Deborah, who I had a reading with when Leah was like 1 year old or something like that. And in this reading, she was doing a reading of the family and Dennis and Leah and me. And she kept talking about this long life that we had together, you know. And when I'm a grandma and when I'm older and then Leia's doing so-and-so and this is her personality. And then I said, wait, you can see that she's going to live a long life in her chart? And she was like, yes, what do you mean? I said, you can't see in her chart that she's going to die or that something's going to happen. And she went, what? Why would you ask me that? Like, she really like took a pause and stopped the reading. It's like, so whoa, 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 whoa. Like, this is a big thing, you know. Where is this fear coming from? Like, why would you ask me that? And I started crying. And I was like, I keep envisioning her dying. Like, I keep seeing different ways of how this most terrible thing is going to happen. And the feeling is not like, if it's going to happen, the feeling is when. It's like, all day, I'm waiting for this to happen. And Deborah, if you ever heard her speak, you know, she's so no nonsense and she's such a Gemini and she's so like big in her in her communication. And she was like, this is not right. There's nothing in your chart that's even remotely suggests anything like this. And actually to the opposite, like especially in your chart, there's this big sense of trust and knowing and like your higher self is not in agreement with this. Like, this is not in alignment with your journey at all. This is an old story. This is not true. This is from trauma, and you gotta address this. You gotta work on this. And she said it in such a matter of fact, like, what? No, this is not true. You know, it was so helpful for me. And you might say, like, well, she's an astrologer. Like, what does she know? It's also the psychology of that, right? Of having someone else tell you, like, your kid is safe. Like, they are so safe. There's nothing here that suggests that they're not. And the thoughts that you're having around them not being safe is an old story. It's something old, but it's something you need to address. It's something you need to look at. And so I started doing that work anyway. And by becoming aware of the fear, right? By knowing, oh, there's this big thing here. By doing that work and astrologically doing a lot of that work was also really important. Getting a real therapist, right? To commit to and talk to and, yeah, just to begin processing that thing that was there was really, really helpful. And then, of course, like, I don't want to not include this, but this was so much worse for me when she was littler. The older she got, the more capable she became, the easier this has become for me, right? Knowing that she's not going to at any moment fall off something or run into the road because she doesn't understand that cars are dangerous, or, you know, or choke on her food because she hasn't, like, properly learned how to chew yet. All of that stuff. The older she's gotten, the easier the stuff has become for me because she can manage. She's sturdier, right? But it doesn't go away, right? It hasn't gone away, clearly, like, not at all. It's still a major, major, major thing for me. And so this time, and I know I'm extremely lucky that she doesn't have any major condition. She hasn't had any major accident. She's never been severely ill. I don't know how I would manage something like that. And I guess no parent does. Like, of course, this is every parent's worst nightmare. But I, like, this weekend when she got, I had two moments, two big moments this weekend where I really felt like I left my body. I don't know how else to describe it. It was one moment, like, in the middle of the night where Dennis walked in to be with her. I was cleaning something outside. She was just throwing up all night. And she was really out of it, really, really out of it. And he goes in as I'm, like, emptying a bucket in the kitchen or in the bathroom. And he goes in and then he yells for me. And he does it with, like, a panic in his voice. And Dennis doesn't get panicked ever. There's no panicking that man. He yells for me with panic in his voice. And he had a moment himself where he walked in and he couldn't wake, and she was throwing up, but he couldn't wake her up. So he had a moment where he was like, oh my God, she's unconscious. We have an unconscious kid here. And he called for me with that panic. And I walk into the room and the way she was lying on the bed, eyes closed, it was just a split second, right? Where she wasn't moving. And for that split second of just the potential of something being severely wrong with her, it's like all the blood leaves my system. I just get this icy cold feeling from my feet all the way up to my head. And I fully feel like I'm disassociating from the whole entire moment. I feel myself just leave my body, float up into space, like, oh, so this is it now, you know? Oh, it's happening now. Like, she's dying now. Like, and then I go back in. And I pick her up and I shake her and she wakes up. She's awake. She's alive. She's, you know, all the things. And I'm back in my body and I'm like, okay. And I just move on, right, with the evening. And then the second time was a few days later when she was still not okay, right? Still not back. And after calling the hospital twice and calling there's this number here in Sweden you can call just for, like, medical support, and one specifically for kids where they consult you and they let you know, should you go in or should you not, or what can you do, or, you know, just to help you over the phone. And when the lady told me, I think you should go in now, like, this has become something that I'm concerned about. I think you should go to the ER now and go to the closest one. And from that moment when I'm like, oh shit, it's actually really bad, because it's hard for me to gauge when I'm always in the worst case scenario. Like, I'm always exaggerating, right? I'm always more worried than I'm supposed to be. I'm always making potential illness or stuff, it's bigger in my head than it is in reality, always. It's very hard for me to trust my intuition in those moments, because my intuition, when it comes to her a potential illness, is I can't access it, right? That like panic of she might die, it's too big for any other voice to be heard. I can't intuitively feel. And so when that woman on the phone was like, you need to go in, you go in right now. And I go over to hang up, I go over to Leah right away to get her dressed so we can go. And then she's not responsive. And like not immediately responsive. And I had again this moment of like, yeah, like ice fills my whole entire body from my feet all the way up to my head. I completely, like, while dressing her, I'm still doing the motions of a human being. I'm still putting on her pants and getting her dressed. But like emotionally, I have left. I am checked out. I am not there. And then she kind of like opens her eyes and she sits up and I'm like, okay, she's here. And I drop back in and I keep going and I pack and we go to the ER and you know, it's fucking horrendous. And we get to the ER. She had to have, it wasn't even a procedure, it was something small, but there was a reason she was like, it was very, very important that we came in, and I have to just monitor her that it doesn't happen again. And she's great now. She's in school today. She's, you know, like immediately after we went to the ER, all of a sudden, like all the color came back to her face. Her eyes were clear. She looked me in the eye. You know, and I had a friend there, one of my best friends, thank God. So I wasn't alone. You know, Dennis was in Holland, but my friend Michaela was there. And we get in the car after the ER and she spoke. She was like, Michaela, what do you think about this and this? And then Michaela told me, like, this was the first it was the first time she addressed me. She hasn't spoken to me in 36 hours. Or like she has 48 hours. Okay, she was there for 2 days. Yeah, she was so out of it. She wasn't even talking to her, you know, at all. And then from there, she's just started coming back, feeling better and better. But I am sitting with this, like just these two tiny moments. And of course, I really hope I'm not, oh God, I really hope I'm not offending anyone with the smallness of her issue. I want to hold space for anyone listening to this who has a child who is actually going through something big, actually dealing with something serious. You know, I cannot imagine what it would be like to be in your shoes. I mean, I think about it all the time, but I still cannot imagine. So I hope I'm not offending you by sharing this, because she doesn't have a serious illness. She doesn't have something life-threatening. She's totally okay. But for me, just these little moments and these few days of this illness and these two moments of for a flash second thinking something's wrong with her, that's enough for me to completely lose it, right? Like, what happens to my nervous system in those moments? How do I come back from that? How do I process that? I actually don't know. And that's just two tiny little like fraction of a second moments. And I truly don't know. I truly don't know, other than maybe share the story the way I'm sharing it now and talking about it, obviously in therapy and with Dennis and with my friends. But to me, those two things, like those two moments this week, are equivalent of, I don't know. It's like running a marathon. That's what it feels like. It's like I ran an emotional marathon these past 6 days. And now Dennis is home. Leah's back. She's eating again. She's like, everything is normal again. She's happy. She's laughing. We've had the last 2 days have been super, super good. Like really, really good. She's active. Everything's okay. But I'm not okay. Oh my God. I am so not okay. And I don't know how to be okay. I guess that's one of the shittiest parts, you know, for so much of the stuff that I process and traumas that I've worked through in my life and this big journey of personal development and healing. Like, I always have a knowing. I know the next step forward. I know the path, at least. I don't know the end destination, but I know how to keep going. But with this, I don't know what to do.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I can't see myself all of a sudden just free from this fear, right? No, because for the rest of my life, literally for the rest of our lives, like, there is a risk of something happening. That's what it's like being a human being. We know at any moment anyone can die. We are all going to die. I'm going to die. She's going to die. You're going to die. Everyone we know is at some point going to die. And we know this is true, right? I mean, obviously we know. We're not stupid. We're not deluded. We know. But we also don't know, right? We can't keep the awareness of that in our day-to-day, or we would not be able to function, right? Obviously, like, in those moments or that year when Leah was little, when I kept that in my front awareness, I couldn't function. I couldn't. So we have to put that away somewhere and sort of pretend like we know and we have things under control and the worst would never happen, but we don't know. And life is completely uncertain and horrible things happen all the time. And kids die all the time. And children get cancer and serious illness, and that happens. Some kids go to school and then don't get to go back home. Like, that happens. And it's not just this big, far away, you know, never gonna happen to me kind of thing. Like, it happens all the time. And I can't stop thinking about the parents of the 19 kids that died in Texas this past week. I can't stop thinking about the people I know who have lost a little one. It's not irrational, you know, to think about these things, because they are real and they are true. And I don't know what the answer is to any of this. I do know that part of the uncertainty of life is the reason we are able to experience the big love, you know, the big joy, that unbelievable, earth-shattering, life will never be the same kind of love. That unbelievable, earth-shattering, life will never, ever be the same kind of love. You know, we're only able to truly and fully experience that because we know it's fleeting. We have a limited time here, and we are aware of that. We know that deep in our souls, in our hearts, we know we have a limited time here. We don't know how much time we have, how long we're here for. We don't know how much time they have, how long they're here for. And I think with that uncertainty, this huge uncertainty of being a human being, comes this urgency, you know, to live as fully as we as we can, to love as fully as we can, to be here, fully here for this journey, to do the best we can at this thing called life. And you know, it hurts to really love, to really truly love is to risk loss. If there's no risk of loss, no risk of heartbreak, no risk of grief, then it's not really, really love, is it? I just wish for myself in this moment and moving forward, because, you know, motherhood is forever, that I could find a softer place to land, that I could anchor into more of that trust that we're here for the long haul and that she's here with me for the long haul, and that I can actually trust that. And I think these things I'm able to connect, the fact that I'm recording a whole podcast about this now, means that there's something moving and healing inside of me. Otherwise, this wouldn't be at the forefront of my awareness now. But I was thinking the other day, like when I was giving birth to her, I wonder if the reason it took me so long to push, you know, was that I didn't really want her to come, because I wasn't ready to find out that she wasn't okay. And since I know now, it's an old story, right? She's here, fully alive. I mean, she's the most alive person I know. Fully, fully, fully alive. Breathing, laughing, smiling. She's never been unsafe. You know, she's safe and alive and healthy and happy and here with me. So this other story that's playing out in the back of my consciousness, it's not real, and it's old, it's ancient. Maybe it's not even mine. And I'm so ready to have this be transformed into something else. And all I can say is I'll share that journey too. So I'm realizing now I probably have to put a big trigger warning at the beginning of this episode, because this episode was kind of a bummer. If you made it all the way here, I hope I didn't bum you out. And if I did, I'm so sorry. And if you don't resonate with anything I shared, oh, I hope you can place a hand to your heart and take a deep breath and feel major gratitude for that. You know, if you have this anchor and this knowing that the people you love are safe, and that you're safe, and that they're here, and that you're here with your people and your loved ones for the long run, then just take a moment for gratitude right now, because that is something I so long for. And if you do resonate with a little bit or a lot of what I just shared in this episode, then also, you know, place a hand to your heart and know you're not alone. You are a feeling human in this big, scary world. And I think it's okay. I think it's okay to have these big feelings, and you're allowed to have these big feelings. And maybe this episode, this resonance that you're feeling right now, is a sign that it's time to have those feelings move a little bit. Maybe they're ready to be alchemized into something else. Because I think underneath this big fear that so many of us are experiencing, there is a trust longing to be felt. Yeah. There is a trust wanting to come through there. I can feel that in my own heart as well. Thank you for being here for this ride with me. I so appreciate you. And by the way, this was the 1,000th episode. How wild is that? And that's counting both Yoga Girl Daily and the Yoga Girl podcast. 1,000 episodes. Kind of fitting that the first ever episode was about Leia, and the 1,000th episode is about her. For as long as I live, my life will be so centered around hers. And that is the greatest blessing. That is the greatest, greatest, greatest blessing. I'm grateful to be a mom. That I know. That I know. Wouldn't change it for the world. Thank you, my loves. Take care of your hearts. And I'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you enjoy this show, it would mean so much to me if you listened and rated the episodes of the Yoga Girl podcast. Just give it a little 5-star review there right in the podcast app. Of course, you can follow all episodes of the Yoga Girl podcast, Conversations from the Heart, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, and wherever you normally get your shows. Of course, thank you to my sponsors. Please support them the way they support this podcast. This was a presentation of Cadence 13 Studio, and I'll see you next week.